Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Celtic Soul Podcast. I'm Andrew Millen, and you're all very welcome to this episode of the podcast when I will be chatting to Bobby Bluebell from Scottish band The Bluebells about life, Glasgow, rock and roll, and Celtic. This episode of this podcast has been sponsored by O'Shea's Temple Bar, Dublin, Irish restaurant, and we thank Martin for his continued support of both the fanzine and the podcast. Thanks very much to all our listeners, viewers, and readers for their continued support. And if you like what we do and you're a Celtic-minded business or a Celtic supporters club and you would like to sponsor an episode of the podcast, please email me at info@celticfanzine.com and you can contact us through social media where you'll find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Don't forget to visit our website for daily news and articles. You can also find all our podcasts and video content there. Details of how to purchase and subscribe to the fanzine, which we have been publishing for the last 21 years. Issue 119, the print edition, is now sold out, but you can still download the digital edition by visiting our shop on CelticFanzine.com, where you will also find all our t-shirts, badges, merchandise and back issues. We are currently putting issue 120 together, and it can be pre-ordered from as early as next week on the website. The Celtic Soul Podcast is available across all platforms, Apple, Spotify, Acast, etc. So hit the subscribe button. You'll never miss an episode, and you can also listen to all the podcasts on our YouTube channel, Celtic Fanzine TV, and also on YouTube at Celtic Fanzine TV. You'll find our video content, including interviews with Celtic players Matt O'Reilly, manager Ange Postecoglou, and the captain Callum McGregor, and other Celtic players past and present. You can also watch our Celtic fan content on Talk from the Terrace, the Grand Old History Pod, and interviews with some famous faces from the music world, the world of politics, and of course some from the entertainment business. So please hit that subscribe, follow and alarm button, Celtic Fanzine TV, and you'll never miss an episode. Keep an eye out on CelticFanzine.com and our social media channels for upcoming events, including Celtic AM specials, dinners, player nights, book launches, gigs, and even a festival in Thailand. It's been a long 2 years, so it's great to be back, and thanks to everyone who turned up at Morphy's Glasgow for our Celtic AM special with Paddy McMenamin, where we launched his new book before the Bodo Glimt game. Special thanks to Dr. Joe Bradley and Lisbon Lion John Fallon, who also joined us for a chat. Now, that's the spiel out of the way, folks, so thanks very much for supporting us. I suppose my guest today, I don't really know him that well. I think I've bumped into him once or twice. I've seen him more on stage, I think, than I've seen him in person. My first memory of Bobby Bluebell, and indeed the Bluebells, was most likely as a teenager when I watched him on Top of the Pops, I think around the mid-80s, maybe 84. And I remember knocking into a neighbour next door, Tal, and he was out to buy the single, Young Heart, and we played it in his room once or twice. And if memory serves me right, a song we were familiar with from growing up as kids in Ireland, the Patriot game, was on the B-side. Bobby Bluebell, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming along, Bobby. It's because of technology, even though I'm in Glasgow twice a week, we're still doing it through Zoom. Because this is
We should have done it right there and then.
Yeah, possibly. But I had a couple of points on me. Bobby, so I might have been the last time we met. The last time we chatted was at the Glasgow Derby at Celtic Park. What a night it turned out to be. Some results, some performance. And always good to get a win against our local rivals.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It's a great night, actually, a really great night. I mean, I think the optimism before the game was obviously was justified, but it was very telling, you know. I think because we're all long-time Celtic supporters, so we kind of kind of tuned in, if you get my drift. We kind of know when it's going to be a good night, and we worry when we're a bit dubious and hope for the best. But that night, I think I've never seen such optimism in my life in the stadium.
Yeah, it was a special atmosphere all day. But Bobby, I was in the city from early morning, and the whole the hotel bar was packed from breakfast time. Every bar was, full house signs up from lunchtime. And then, we ended up going to a restaurant in the afternoon because it was the only place we could get a bit of comfort, because every pub was packed. All the regular haunts, just packed.
You came to the West End, it was perfect there.
I couldn't afford to drink up there. I drink in the East End.
It's all free.
Well, free for you maybe, but certainly not free for me. But Ange Postecoglou's players, they're creating a great buzz in the city again, especially among the Celtic support. But there's one thing that's created a buzz in the city as well, and that's, we're now going back to gigs. I managed to get to the Barrowlands for the Selector and From the Jam. Didn't even know the gig was on. Managed to buy a ticket outside. I think it was after the Motherwell game. No, not Motherwell. The late winner. Abada. Anyway. Me, Mayan's gone with two games a week, but I did the Gallagher after the game, and seen the tour bus and stroll over and says, "Who's playing?" And they told me, and I ended up picking up a ticket outside half a lad. Yeah. And it was brilliant to be back. It was the first time I've been at a gig in over 2 years, and what a place to go back to a gig. Then I was lucky enough to be at Texas last week in the Olympia Theatre. I got two gigs because they'd done the Southside album as a kind of acoustic as the support band, and then they come out and done all the hits. And again, the Olympia Theatre is one of the top venues in Ireland. So to be back in two iconic venues after returning to football about 6 months ago, just amazing. As a musician and someone who gigs, 2 years in lockdown, and then are you back out gigging, or what's the plans, are you even going to gigs?
Yeah, we played the Barrowlands, funny enough, just after the lockdown stopped for the Scottish Music Awards, and we've played a few gigs since that period, since the whole thing's gone, come along COVID. So there's always been little gaps where you could play gigs, and we're playing down the Rabbit Hole in July, which is a big festival up at Lake of Monteith in Scotland, which has been postponed now for the last 2 years. So yeah, it's good, and I'm really glad Texas are back playing again. Obviously, they're playing in Glasgow soon. I went with them the last time they played at that theatre in Dublin, Olympia. It was a brilliant gig. It's a great venue, really great venue.
Yeah, you mentioned Dublin there. Have you? You have obviously played back in the heyday, maybe in Dublin and in Ireland. Yeah. So you have to have some stories of those trips.
Yeah, well, that one we went to with Texas, I remember it was. I was really shocked because that's where the Beatles played, It was a really famous Beatles venue, so that was one of the places for us. But when we played, I went there the last time was with Shakespeare's sister, and we did a tour around Ireland. We actually kissed the Blarney Stone, as you can probably tell, Dublin, I remember going around Dublin. Ireland's a really strange place for a Scottish person to go around, because it's so similar in lots of ways. But all we ever got warned was don't go to Stab City, which I think is Limerick, Limerick was brilliant, we've also played as the Bluebells. We played the Ballybunion Bachelor Festival, which was basically a town full of priests in plain clothes, trying to cop off of anybody they could, including some of our band. Great golf courses too, of course.
Yeah, you like the golf, don't you?
Yes, we all like golf in Scotland, I think.
I done the book launch with Paddy McMenamin last week, and Paddy's a massive golf fan, and I had to pull him up because John Fallon's a golf fan, and he was in the audience, and I'm saying, look, you didn't come here to talk about golf, because it's this foreign thing. I can't understand why anyone would walk around a golf course.
Well, I was out playing with Frank McAvaney and John Hartson last week. All the football players are obviously mad for golf. A lot of the pop bands like Johnny played a long time in Texas. And obviously you get people like Lloyd Cole, So, it's a very big thing in Scotland amongst golfers.
I think I'd like to just go and maybe carry the bag around and listen to the likes of Lloyd Cole and yourself chatting about gigs and stuff
That's a big thing. The big thing about golf is the chat, to be honest, it is the camaraderie, I would say very few of us are good golfers, but we're all very good at talking.
And writing.
And Ryan, yeah, well, maybe.
And do you see Lloyd Cole much? Because I know you see Johnny from Texas.
He's coming over soon. I'm going to try and take him up to Loch Lomond and stuff like that. But he's over soon. He lives in America, so his tour's finally been given the okay to go ahead. So he'll be here soon, you know. And Lawrence from the Bluebells, his son's an up and coming, highly tipped golfer. You know, he got to the semifinals of the British Amateur, Scottish Amateur, I think it was, during the last summer there. So fingers crossed for his career too, you know.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And I know Jordan McCluskey's son is, I think he plays in the blind team. He plays for Scotland on the blind team.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've read a few things about him. But it's a thing I never really, and it's funny, where I live, I'm surrounded by golf courses. You have been Kendall Ed when he had the Irish Open.
You must be quite close to a lot of great golf.
It's just out the road from me. That's the toughest course, because when players come over to do functions, they generally take in a game of golf. And when I did send them to Baltray, as we call it, but it's known as County Loud, they all come back and say, oh, it's such a tough course and such a this. And
all golf courses are too tough. They're all hard.
I'm just about 5 miles here to the sea, so like there's obviously the links courses around me, the Sea Point as well, and then Bettystown. So, but as I said, you know, a good field you could graze good cattle on them fields, or maybe walk the dog instead of playing golf.
Well, it's almost the same thing.
Well, just before the lockdown, around Christmas, Texas did a gig for the homeless in the SW3. I think that's the name of the venue.
And, yes, that's right.
And by the way, my son thanks you for getting him on the guest list to
no problem.
A rave DJ there recently, because usual gang of lads arrive in Glasgow, you know, think they can just buy tickets at the door and then couldn't get in. But a few text messages went out and you got them in.
Yeah, well, Johnny got them in, but I just passed the message on. But yeah, they were more than welcome. It's a great gig, a really fantastic gig.
Oh, he loves the dance music. He's off now. He's heading to Ibiza to DJ for the summer. He's just got to do his final exams this next month. He's an electrician.
So it's a DJ exams now.
If he passes his exams, he'll be gone for 4 months. Because I think because of the lockdown as well, you know, I think just like 2 years of not having any gigs to do. But in fairness, now he honed his craft. He spent hours producing stuff and his own tunes and that. So he's looking forward to it. He was over there for 5 days last summer. I think he'd done one of them villas.
Yeah, have a great time.
I think he said he was on at 5 o'clock in the day, and the main DJ didn't come on until 2 a.m. So I think he might have just played to his mates.
Wow. That's a long shift, isn't it?
Yeah. thanks for getting him in. Anyway, he said to pass on me thanks. But you DJed there that night and you're doing a great old 80s set. We really loved it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot. Well, we were trying to match the period of, as you mentioned before, Southside. So Johnny and Charlene helped me with some of that playlist as well. We were trying to capture the vibe that they had when they were recording the album, their first album in the Southside, you know. So I think we got it quite well. Fingers crossed anyway.
They're an incredible band as well when you think that it's the original lineup with the exception of the drummer on this tour. To stay together so long and have such long longevity when, you know, yourself, a lot of rock and roll people, they tend to fall out and then fall back in love later on.
Well, they've got she's a great singer. She's I think she's just got better every record. She was fantastic at the start, but now she's just world class, you know. And I think the biggest thing about Texas is the song quality never really drops, you know. The songs they're first class songs all the time, you know.
Yeah, the new album was brilliant, and then they finished the show off with a cover of Coming Eileen, and what a great band. Dexy's been in Runners, and there was kind of like I kind of see similarities from that kind of Dexy's Celtic, you know, the Celtic soul rebel stuff, the later stuff in the '80s. We're kind of the Bluebells, you know.
Well, we were good friends. We were friends with Kevin. We still are friends with Kevin, but we were on the same kind of record label, Phonogram, and we used to stay in the same boarding house as them in Kilburn when we first moved down. And I think it's just a kind of zeitgeist thing, because obviously the Pogues were going. I think Scottish people and Irish people are very drawn to folk and country music, you know. I think because we originated it basically, and I remember. Kevin was going to get married at one point, and he was suggesting that we played at his wedding, you know. And I think that was we would do the perfect song to play in Sweden, by the way, you know. Come on, Eileen and Young at Heart in a little medley.
I think I've heard about a couple of wins.
Well, I sang Young at Heart with Texas in Glasgow a couple of times at Kelvin Grove Park, you know, in the amphitheatre there. So we did a cover of Young at Heart with Texas, and me and Charlene sang it together. It was really, really great moment for me, you know.
Brilliant. And it's still a song that kind of has, you know, everyone seems to know it no matter what age they are. The Young at Heart song, people may not know, especially younger people, it's not the Bluebells, but they'll have heard it and they'll be able to sing along. It's just one of them songs that has, you know, maybe true when it was used in an advert, wasn't it?
That's right, for Volkswagen, correct, yeah.
So that's how you could get the new golf clubs.
I made more money out of DJing, I think, than I made out of Young at Heart, I think, you know.
Yeah, tell us DJing a bit about the DJing.
Well, I was DJing since probably about... The Bluebells first started, we played in a place called the Rock Garden, which is a bar in Glasgow, in Queen Street. And the owner there, we'd have parties there, so I started DJing at them. And then he asked me to DJ there on a regular basis. And then from there, he bought a lot of clubs like the Tunnel and the Volcano and places like that in Glasgow. So it just became like a sort of like, there was a kind of lull in the Bluebells between sort of like the early 90s to you know, for 10 years, and I just DJed all the time, maybe 4 or 5, sometimes 7 nights a week. So it's a great job DJing, I just started about to find out, but it really keeps you in tune with, I love music and I love going to clubs, but I don't like dancing, if you get my drift. So the best job for a person who doesn't like dancing in a club is to DJ, really.
Yeah, it's a great buzz. I DJ and it's like, I suppose, I don't know when I was younger, but I found it hard to get gigs with the music I played because, you know, the back here then, like, you know, it was trendy clubs and they wanted the local, you know, the leading pop songs at the time, you know, the top four.
Glasgow's a very kind of house city in techno, you know, it's always been driven. Of course, you can throw in those kind of tunes into the mix, but in Glasgow, they dance hard, so you can't really, if you're doing the arches or the Tunnel, you've got to keep folk dancing the whole time. You know, otherwise you're not going to have a job, really. You know,
I think I've only been in the Arches once, and that was to see Toots and the Maytals, and that was and.
Oh, well, I was that guy. I went to see them there, maybe the same night.
Ah, brilliant! Yeah, it was a summer's night. We were on our way to Canada, and we stopped for one night in Glasgow. We were flying the next morning, and we didn't know Toots were playing, and again we had to bum our way into the gig.
You've got the best life, haven't you?
But we get in. that's a long time ago. I've looked enough to see Toots a few times, and it's brilliant because. I do a ska reggae club with a friend of mine. Well, we haven't done it since before the lockdown, but hopefully we'll get back. But I'm back. I DJed in Glasgow and McCool's. I've done an alternative kind of, I do alternative tunes. I don't do house music, but people do dance. Bit of Northern Soul and a bit of reggae.
Well, I did reggae for nothing but reggae for 5 years in the Brasserie in Oramore, and I loved it. I mean, the song reggae is just the best thing in the world, man. If you find the right tracks, they're just incredible.
And it's funny, Johnny's. I got talking to Johnny about reggae music in Satley Park. That's how I met Johnny. It wasn't like that.
Wow.
It wasn't that he was, you know, Texas. It was we started talking about reggae music. And,
well, he's come down to the club because it was reggae. So the only time I've ever seen Johnny go to the club.
He loves it. Yeah. And he gave me this Studio One. It's like a lounge book for your table. The next game I met him, he gave me this book. And it's just this, it's fantastic. You know, anyone that's into, you know, old ska or reggae, and they just, every, you know, you turn every page and it's just, and you're going, oh, I've got that album or I haven't got that album. Now I need to listen to that. And with it's great now with technology, you know, YouTube and that you can go on and listen to these.
But exactly.
It's just like, and it was funny, in between the Texas, the Southside set and the, as I said, the rock and roll gig in the Olympia, my mate had turned around to me, the guy I DJ with, and he says, some magic tunes here. They're all covers, you know. And Johnny had put a reggae ska set together for the interval. And
fantastic.
I knew it was him. I knew it was only him because they weren't you know, they weren't a normal, like floor fillers, if you'll say. There was a couple of tunes there that I was kind of going, oh, who's that? And, it was brilliant. But I'm back at, I was in McCool's in the summer, and it was just brilliant to be back DJing. And then I'm back there in March, the day after Paddy's Day. But I got my first gig in Ireland.
Yeah,
oh, brilliant, yeah. It's a Friday night, and I got my first gig this Saturday. I just got a text yesterday to see if I do a gig. Now, I'm up at 4 in the morning to go to Hibs game, but it's, and I finish at 1. But I said, I can't tone it down. I do like dancing and making an EJ of myself and that, but there's nothing better than going on and seeing someone tapping their feet if you're playing. And I've DJed to 3 people, when you go into a place and it's full, it's such a buzz, like.
Do you know the best bit of the night is always the start when there's no one there, and then people come in bit by bit, and you can just see them getting, you know, because at the end of the night, when it's all packed, it's really hard to see anybody. But that thing you're talking about, when they walk in and already they're moving, and it really makes you feel great, I think, that, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes in places that you're like, this wouldn't be a room I'd normally be in, but you're kind of playing with your eyes at the start because you're watching who's coming in, you know, and you can always. Nearly, you're trying to tell by how they're dressed or how they're reacting, what music they might like, you know, to feel them into it. But so, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be tired in Easter Road on Sunday, but I don't care. I'm just delighted to be back because it was just a long, long time to be doing. To be doing podcasts on Zoom and kind of living the life of a monk, really. But Johnny, I want to go back further now. We spoke there a bit about DJing, and I just tipped on your music a little. Growing up in Glasgow.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Govan Road. My dad was a Rangers fan. You know, he was, and my mum was an Italian Catholic. So growing up, till I was about, I wasn't conscious enough about it, but four or five years, my dad had quite a tough time. He worked in the shipyards, you know. But in the end, it didn't matter at all. His friends stopped by him, you know. And then we moved up to Creighton, which is just up Helen Street, really close to Ibrox. And my first ever football game was with my dad to see Rangers, you know. And I was about 6 or 7, he told me. And like he said, it was funny, it was a cup game against Hamilton. And I didn't want to leave, he said, because I thought they got awarded the cup, but it was only the third round, you know. So we waited in an empty stadium because I wouldn't leave, you know. But I went to a school called Lourdes up on Paisley Road West. So me and my friends, we all started to go to see Celtic about 9 or 10, you know. And there was no problem with my father at all. He was quite happy with all that, you know.
And when you say there, Bobby, that did he get hassled for being married to a Catholic?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, and not his family were. Kind of Northern Irish based, and like my dad was a really good guy. Everyone's dad's a good guy, but I mean, we never picked up on any of that stuff. It was only years later when I was like, you know, a lot older that we talked about it, you know, because he wasn't very talkative. He was on night shift all the time in Fairfield, so I never saw him a lot of the time growing up. I would go to school, he would come home from work, you know, I'd come back from school, he would go to work, so it would be like it was like ships that pass in the night, you know.
Yeah.
But so it's only when he retired from work that we actually really had the conversations that a father and a son would have normally, you know. And that was great. That was a great period for me.
Yeah, and you said, you know, you went to see Celtic at a young age. I didn't see Celtic till I was in my late teens because I was attracted by the Irish international players that were playing. Tricolour flying overhead, you know, it was quite appealing to a teenager. Plus, there was also buses going through the town that were picking up to go to Glasgow for games. They weren't picking up for any other club. So it was, I had an older brother that was living in London, and he was going to games and sending me back fanzines and programmes and stuff like that. And he brought me home the History of Celtic one Christmas and a book and a video. So, and that was kind of my stand, but I'm always fascinated, you know, when people are just born into it. Or in your case, you were born into a mixed marriage.
I think a lot of them. I mean, in Glasgow, it's very common. You know, I'm big friends with Graham from Hipsway, and he's a Rangers fan. But again, you know, mixed family again. I think, you know, right? The friendship thing in Glasgow. It's very underrated between Celtic and Rangers fans. People like to create this image of division. Do you know what I mean? You know, like you know, but it's. To be honest, right, I've really seen it. You know, I know there's fanatics. You know, like, but I've really been witness to it. I remember when I was 8 years of age, Celtic won the European Cup, and we lived in Peyton near Paisley Road West, and they had to come back from the airport, from Albert Sinch Airport, and all the neighbours in my street Protestant Catholics, you know, Jews and Hindus, everybody were, right, came out and cheered the buses that went along, you know. So unless I've got a false memory, but I didn't feel any of that kind of like animosity back then at all, you know. Even now I've seen it, but really, really experienced it, you know.
Yeah, well, I suppose the rock and roll scene is a mixed scene, always has been, you know, and Glasgow was a melting pot of cultures.
Yep. And the club scene, there you go. I mean, the club scene, no one knows who you support in the club, you know. You're there to dance, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny as well with you know, it's not on the city sport or, you know, what kick or foot they kick or whatever in music. And when the dance scene became big like in 89, 88, 89, like, a lot of the football hooligans who you know, especially down the south of England, you know, rather than, you know, killing each other, they were some of them were running the doors at the raves and others were in hugging each other, you know.
They were getting too rich to fight.
You know, that was, it's just strange, like, you know, the way that, I suppose, music unites and football divides.
Well, it's the way it's always been. I mean, even in Ireland, you know, the civil rights marches that start were Protestant and Catholics. It wasn't just like, it was, I don't think the word Catholic was particularly mentioned, though they wanted to vote. But then divisiveness is designed to separate people, you know, who should be, maybe we should be fighting things more important than that. You know, I mean, Britain's becoming a very right-wing country, sorry to get political, but you watch that programme on BBC, The Rise of the Nazis, and you see that was kind of sleptwalked into, you know, people knew it was wrong, but they didn't bother speaking up against it. And we've got a very right-wing cabinet, you know, very right-wing, Priti Patel, you know, Rab, people like that, dangerous people, you know, and the press here is very moribund, is that the right word, you know, where they just seem to accept that's the state of affairs, you know. There should be really, I mean, I'm surprised there's not protest marches and but maybe that's just part of the process in Britain, that we just accept that what we're given, you know.
Yeah, I think it can be the same in Ireland when it comes to politics, and that people just go, oh, well, sure.
That's Scotland too, yeah.
Sure, what about it? Sure, nothing will change, you know. Like they won't change who they vote for, because they go, sure, nothing will change.
I remember reading a book about the IRA once, and I think it was a guy called Joel Egan or something, Joel Egan, I'm not too sure, but he was saying that it doesn't matter what flag's flying over a country, in the end you'll shop in Tesco and watch Coronation Street. And I thought that was pretty much spot on, you know.
And the book launch we did last week was Paddy McMenamin, and Paddy's book is called From Arm Struggle to Academia. Paddy's 68 now, and he finally got round during the lockdown to write his book. But, you know, I'm reading the book at the moment, and he does speak about the civil rights marches, and he speaks about joining. He didn't come from a Republican family, but he joined the Fianna to protect the area. But, you know, his early politics and the split between the official IRA and into the you know, and the prison IRA, you know, it was politics. You know, they believed, you know, that working Catholics and working class Protestants, you know, had the same goals.
And absolutely.
And then, you know, but it turned out then that they didn't, like, you know, because of the conflict that then raged. But he's so honest, and he even talks about, you know, the books, he was reading in prison.
You mentioned the Patriot Game we did as a B-side. We did that in 1983 because of the Falklands War, and we did it with Dominic Bean, who wrote the original lyrics of the song, and we changed them because, you know, he had a bit of a dispute with his brother anyway about the stickies and the trolls, right, you know, and so he was trying to make it completely clear in our version what he was singing about, which is what we're mentioning, how people can manipulate youngsters, the young people, into an ideology that maybe, if they really thought about it, was just the same ideology as the person they were fighting, you know. So I think, I mean, we got a lot of grief overdoing that song, but I'm very proud that we did do that song. You know, I'm very proud that as the Bluebells that we took a stance against the Falklands War, and we've took a stance, even though we're seen as being a kind of like, you know, twee pop band, we are far from being a twee pop band, if you get me. Just same as Kevin Rowland, and same as most people in pop groups, but, you know, there isn't a lack of a message there, you know. I mean, music is a medium that you have to communicate something in your songs, you know, and I think a lot of the songs that are dismissed as being, you know, twee pop songs or not at all, if you really listened to the lyrics and you really studied, you know, and understood what the bands were trying to achieve. I'm talking about people like Depeche Mode and Culture Club, you know, I'm talking about Wham, you know, who, and of course Paul Weller, you know, who really knew what side was the right side and weren't afraid to state that, you know, as they went along.
Yeah,
and Paul, of course.
I suppose we're growing up and we're putting posters on our wall and, you know, smash hits and... you know, watching Top of the Pops and that. Then when we get a little older, we get, you know, especially, well, I did anyway in my teens, I got quite political. And it was from going to gigs like the House Martins and, you know, bands like the Redskins and Billy Bragg and that. Yeah. Because you were getting political newspapers and leaflets outside, and fanzines and that. So the music certainly has shaped my politics.
Yeah, well, look, it's got Bananarama, right? Bananarama, right, with... And Gary Kemp from Spandau Ballet, I think they went as well. Thomas Riley got shot in the back by the British Army, right? His brother was in Stiff Little Fingers, you know. And the three girls went and walked behind that coffin. You know, can you imagine the outreach that caused? Because there was a bombing campaign in Britain at the time. And they still had the guts and the decency to do that, you know. I mean, you know, because that's the sort of thing that I think people should try and remember. You know, it's completely forgotten about. You know, and then Gary Kemp wrote that song about the same thing, you know, Through the Barricades. You know, Paul McCartney wrote Give Ireland Back to the Irish. But all these songs are kind of dismissed as being, like I said, trivial pop songs. But they've actually got a lot of meaning, you know, and a lot of guts to do.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention Dago, when he was a Celtic fan, and we've heard about his story from his friends. We've had them at Saturday AM in Glasgow, but we've never recorded them on the podcast. And I met Adrian Digney, who would have been a friend of Docos. And they had a big banner for him on the anniversary of his death at Celtic Park. And when they hung it, and the Riley family came over, and I met Jim. And I'm actually waiting for Jim... now, to confirm, he's going to come down on the train with Aidsa when we're going to record him in the studio about his musical career and his brother. And we'll get, you know, because...
Please send him my greetings as well. Please,
I will indeed, yeah. I love Stiff Little Fingers as well.
Fantastic band.
I think one of my older brothers brought in the first album into the house and the singles and that, and that was kind of it. And I've been lucky enough, I've kept all the records of all my older brothers.
Me too. I've got all I was the older brother.
Well, I was the youngest.
One record.
And the oldest got married and the other two moved to England.
Than you, that's all.
Yeah, the oldest got married and then he moved out and then the other two lads moved to England. So I claimed all the records and, you know.
That's a gold mine you've got there, by the way.
It was great because the oldest lad was a boot boy. So I had all the kind of glam rock stuff.
Wow.
The next brother was a punk, and then he got into rockabilly, so I had that. And then the next brother was a mod, and I was into ska. So we had, you know, it was a great.
I was all those things in one person.
Yeah, but you know, it's only when you get older, you know, you put them all into, like, when you're young, you know, you're into this music, and you're not into, you know,
exactly.
When you get older, then like you put them all into your DJ set because they're just good tunes. But yeah, so hopefully Jim, and if Aidsa, if you're listening, but you do listen, you know, you need to get them down because this is knocking on now a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, get them on.
Yeah, because he'd be a good guest. Now, before we move on to the Bluebells, just any early memories from Celtic?
Yeah, well, it's funny because, I mean, we were talking about the other day, in fact, the day you were there when we were at the Old Firm game, you know, George Conley always sticks out, you know, for me, maybe because of the story of how it's quite a pop star story, you know, it's kind of like the flaming comet and then gone, you know, like that's very much a, you know, one hit wonder kind of thing, you know, pop star thing. And even I remember buying books about George Conley and trying to work out why he chucked it, you know, well, how could you become such a good player and then walk out of it so quickly, you know, but it was a lot deeper than that, you know. But he sticks out. But lots of things. I remember things like when we were in the charts and the jungle was still going and people singing your name in the jungle, you know, and feeling like dead chuffed because he played Young at Heart a lot at the start. We did the Celtic 1988 record, the Bluebells and a few other bands. We did the EP for them, you know, we sang all the old songs in a kind of modern way, you know, and I used to play that every half time, you know. So it was always a great feeling. But the biggest thing I remember, and we'll just talk this again, as I say, another day, we really miss changing ends, you know, where you could, where you would start at whatever goal Celtic were shooting into, you would start there and then walk round, because it's a difficult thing to sit next to the same person for 6 years, you know, or in the same area. I think it's took a lot of the fun of football out of it, if you get my drift, you know, where you a big gang guys would go together and meet there. We'll meet you at that at gate 16, you know, or that gate, you know, and now that's kind of like you're all kind of spread out all over the place, you know. So I noticed what happened with the disasters and, you know, Bradford and Hillsborough, but it'd be great if you could get back to standing, you know, stadiums again, you know. I just think the atmosphere would be fantastic. And
yeah, and like you go to Celtic Park and we have the standing section now, which is the, you know, it's the envy of all clubs. Like, everyone would love a standing section. I'd love to see another standing section coming in, maybe in the Jockstein lower, maybe, so that the boys who are up at the back of the Jockstein, the other ultra group, they could come down. Because when I went to Turkey, there's probably 3-4 ultra groups in the stadium, and when one stops, the other starts, and it was just it was a terrifying atmosphere, I'd say, for, you know, visiting teams. Now we had a few shares before the game, so we were okay, we were feeling brave and we were well caged in. But yeah, it's just, and as you say, you know, you used to be able to stand with your mates or walk around to do the goal, and obviously football is
when they had the boys enclosure, you know, which was a really brilliant idea when it was just quid. All young boys. I mean, they could do that now at Park Kids, see in front of the director's box in the main stand. That whole area could be, take all the seats out and get young kids in there, man. It would just be phenomenal, and it'd be safe as well, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And can you imagine, you know, I mean, we've got young fans. I mean, it's funny when you go to Park Head and all the kids are with their parents. We never went with our parents. You know what I mean? Like, I remember being in the, when Andy Walker scored the 2 goals at the Dundee game. I thought I was going to die. It was so busy. You know, I was older then. I wasn't a kid, but it was the crush was incredible. You know, and I don't remember anything about. I knew we won the league, right, and we did the whole thing. But all I remember was thinking, how are we going to get out of this? Because it was that scary. So you have to balance the two things, but at that time I think Celtic were just filling the ground up with everybody they could get in, and, you know, and not really telling what, you know, not really sticking to the regulations, you know.
Yeah, our supporters club has we've over 120 season books, and the good thing about it is that, so we've standing tickets, so say, you know, there's a gang of lads going over this week. Well, they'll use them this week. They'll be in the Jockstein lower the next week, you know. So there's different areas in the ground. Like, and if they go over with their partner or they go over with their kids, you know, they don't want to go in the standing section. So there's options there for them. And I think a lot of supporters clubs, you kind of walk it like that. But, you know, I know when Conor was over a couple of weeks ago, like for the gig, he played Mullerwell the next day, and it was like, you know, they all wanted standing. They all wanted standing.
We're at the stage now where, I mean, every time I've been to Parkhead recently, you get your dinner, you mean you're getting drinks brought to you. So, I mean, would I want to lose that again? I don't know, right? But I still, and then you go to Hampden, which is probably one of the worst stadiums in the whole world, you know, and you're so far from the action, and it's such a hard place to get to. It's an even worse place to get home from, you know, right? It's football. It's a dedication. You have to really. Whereas I remember when I was a few boys going there, it never seemed to be the same problem. Just you got the bus, you know. You know, you got home. It seemed to be a lot more buses, you know.
You probably weren't thinking about it then, Bobby. You know, as you get older, you think about, well, how am I going to get home?
I think that's what I said about memory. How it placed everything seemed to be better in the past, you know, but. I think the team's fantastic. I mean, people say, how would you compare that team to teams from the past? Do you? Football's changed so much, you know. I mean, I guess, I remember, like, I mean, being sold the fact that Tom Rodgick couldn't play 90 minutes, you know, right? He had to take him off every 70 minutes. Now, obviously, he can play 90 minutes, you know, but can he play 90 minutes 3 times a week? You know, that's how football's changed, because it was one game on a Saturday, every team played at 3 o'clock. I miss that, you know, and then in a national game, you know, it was just that kind of like more space between games. Now you can't keep up. There's probably about 10 games tonight, 10 games tomorrow, you know. I mean, the top bit English games as well, you know, it's a really hard thing to, there seems to be too much football in a lot of ways.
Yeah, before I started going to see Celtic, we've the League of Ireland here, and League of Ireland attendances were big when I was a kid. They're starting to grow again now. I think I was reading an article this week saying that, you know, attendances were up last week because it was the first round of fixtures, because we've a summer league, we play different to Scotland, and that was it. And the only other football we got was the big match of the day, and we also got a midweek game, so midweek sports special and sports night. So we looked forward, and it didn't matter who, because I remember seeing Celtic and Nottingham Forest on sports night.
Yeah,
no highlights. I know. I Celtic to me was, I didn't, you know, in the early teens, apart from my brother having, you know, Celtic wrote in the school bag, I didn't really know much about them. So you would look forward to Wednesday night to watch.
Yeah.
You know, there could be boxing on, it could be, you know.
Yeah.
And now, you know, every 4 years you look forward to the Olympics. I would have watched the Winter Olympics. I haven't watched the Winter Olympics because it's 24/7 sport now.
Yeah, a tyranny of choice, as they call it, and it's absolutely spot on, right? I mean, I've bought one of those things for this year because I had a good vibe on it. I mean, you just get those ladders, you know, where you put the team that got the table or down the table each week, and you would move it, and it's actually brought me focus right into me to seeing Rangers at the top there for a while, right, and now as you put Celtic, can we go sixth at one point, you know, right, to fifth, to fourth, to third. I quite like that whole vibe, you know. I like knowing who the top scorer is. I'll tell you the difference, right, which I've noticed, right, in the pop world, it used to have Tops of Pops, right, so everybody knew who number one the charts were, right. No one in this country or the world knows who number one the charts are anymore, right. There's no Tops of Pops, no one knows. There's no goal, there's no European Cup for a young band anymore. You can have a young band like St. Glasgow called the Brontes, right, and they're doing really well, right, but they haven't got a Tops of Pops to get on, so all their friends and neighbours and their parents can go, look, that's my daughter, that's my son. And I mean, for a boy, young boys from Govan and Ken Davis from Boswell, it was a fantastic achievement for us, you know, like, because you felt validated. Your mums and dads would go to the shops and get people patting on the back and going, oh, I saw your boy on telly, you know, right. And so the focus has gone from football a little bit too, like you mentioned, sports scene. Now the sports scene's on iPlayer now, you know, right, you have to watch it when it's on because you can watch it any time, right, whereas that focus when everyone wanted to get home, you know, now you get it for radio shows. Everyone rushes out the ground to get in the car, you know, and turn on the radio and hear Chris Boyd saying, you know, 3 stone 4 penalties for Rangers denied, and Rangers Celtic 16 offside goals in that game. You go back because you want to hear the chat, and you want to get wound up, and you want to have the discourse. Now there's that discourse. If you say to somebody, did you watch the game last night? Oh no, what time was it on? I mean, you know, the focus, you know, the attention to detail that your whole group of friends had is kind of gone now, you know. I'll watch that when I go home, they say now, you know.
Yeah, I have a nephew, Robert, and he's football nut. And I just said, he'll be able to tell you, know, what the game of the day is, or like he's all the stats and German football. Yeah. But he's one of the very few, because I think there's overkill, because you can sit down on any day and like watch football 24/7, like, you know. And even now, if you put,
do you remember everyone knew who won a European Cup, right? Stoya Bucharest, right? You know, like everyone knew. No one knows. I mean, I'd asked my friend yesterday, we're all big golfers. I asked, four of us played, and I asked them, who won the British Open last year? Only one of them knew the answer.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what we're talking about. The focus isn't there anymore. You know, there's too much information. You know, there's too many golfers. There's too much to come in, too many tournaments. European Cup, who won the European Cup last year? I mean, I'd have to stretch to try and remember who won it last year. Was it Chelsea?
Yes.
Won it last year, yeah. So, I mean, I used to know every European Cup winner. I could tell you them all in order, you know, right? I could tell you many times who'd won the European Cup, you know. And I don't know if that's still the case now. I would doubt it. Well, like, people look up Google now for that, you know.
I could name the Liverpool, the great Liverpool teams of the 80s, but I couldn't name the Liverpool the team now.
We all know the Celtic team off by heart, you know. I mean, I know the Wembley team had been England off by heart. I mean, but that's the thing is that again, you can't even remember. It's a tough one. I remember Andy Walker, like, obviously saying, you know, one of those games, and you remember the Martinelli area in Seville and the whole thing, which was a really great period of football as well, you know.
Still paying back the loan.
I know. They're coming back, you said it. Football's coming home.
but, oh, no, don't tell me. I remember going to a gig in Fizzy Park in London, Madness. Tusen de Beitels, Desmond Dekko, Rico Rodriguez, Space and Catatonia. What a brilliant gig it was, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know when it was going. It was like, it was kind of England's going away. You know, it was.
Wow.
Football's coming home. It was that year, right?
You sing that song, tell the truth.
Everybody was singing it, and you know, in between the bands and that, you know. It was a bizarre gig because you had a London band, obviously Madness, so they're the headline band, Finsbury Park, outdoors. What a day, sunshine. But then you had, you know, three Jamaican bands, a Welsh band and a Liverpool band.
And fantastic.
From talking to the Liverpool people I know, a lot of them don't follow the national team. So this was, whoever had done the lineup was going, they weren't really thinking about England football's coming on.
Yeah.
And it was bizarre because there was people Z-calling up the front at you know, Tucson the Maytals. And you're saying, well, what the fuck did you come here for? Like, you know. and outside the football crews, West Ham, and I remember West Ham, and I think it was Chelsea were going at her, and Tottenham were going at her outside the pub. And it was kind of like, I was getting like, it's not like a gig in Ireland where everyone's just there to enjoy themselves. Like, you know, there was just so much going on everywhere, like, you know.
Yeah.
So football certainly came home that time anyway, because I was in, and it's funny, I think that it was my stag party. We went to air to a scooter rally. And England played Scotland that day. It was a Saturday, a really sunny day. And England played Scotland that day. So it's not very often I support Scotland, but I was supporting them that day in the pub.
Well, thank you. We all support Ireland, by the way, so there you go.
Well, we'll be playing each other twice this coming year. So I have a bus over for the game in Glasgow, so we're hoping that it's still alive for both teams. Then
it will be.
I don't fancy Ukraine away this time, but
may not even be on. Maybe play Russia,
right, Bobby? But well, you know,
no bad jokes.
or a part of Russia. The Bluebells is kind of the main, you know, focus of your it's alive, you know. You weren't born Bobby Bluebell. You know, you became Bobby Bluebell. Just tell the listeners the rock and roll story of the Bluebells.
Well, it's that I was working in an architect's office when I left college, and I was starting to go and see bands of my own, you know. I was just going to see things like punk bands were starting up, you know. But Glasgow wasn't a really great place for punk gigs. So it used to be a bus from Bruce's record shop. It would take you out to Paisley to two venues there to see bands there. So I started going on the bus on my own. But I realised from going to Bruce's that there was fanzines in the shop where people wrote their own fanzines. And it kind of dawned on me that if I had a fanzine, I could get into the gigs for nothing, you know, right? And I could meet the bands. I could say, I've got a fanzine, can I interview you? So I did. And then the guy I was working for had a photocopier in his office, but he was never there. He was always away doing jobs. So I was in there on my own. So I realised I could do the fanzine in the office, print it, take it out to Bruce's, sell it, and go to gigs. So that worked really well for four issues. And then about the fourth issue, we were running out of bands to write about because there wasn't a lot of bands in Glasgow. So I started making up bands myself, you know, like inventing bands and saying that this band's great. And one of them playing up is called 07. And I met Johnny from Old Images at this point, and Jerry's brother was a manager, and Claire I'd known from school, from my friends from school. And I was doing this, and a guy called Alan Horn, who had a label called Postcard Records, said, Hodgie, who's that band that you got in your fanzine? So I couldn't say to him, that's a band I've made up. So I had to go home and make up a tape, you know, like, and say, oh, that's just what they sound like, you know. So I borrowed a drum machine off a guy called Davey Rudden, who was in a band called End Games, and it had a guitar at home. So I made up this kind of song called She Hates Travel, but I just found out the words in a magazine. It was about Frank Sinatra was talking about Ava Gardner, saying that they split up because she hates travelling, you know, right? So I more or less sang the words of that, and I gave it to Alan. And then a bit later he said, hey, I quite like that tape you gave me. He goes, I wouldn't mind going to see the band, right? So I thought, God, now I've got to start a band, you know, because I didn't want him to come and see a band that didn't exist, you know. So Jerry, who's Johnny's brother, he got me a band. He found me a bass player, a drummer, and a guitar player, and a girl singer, right? And took me down to Govan Hill, and they were in a church. And he goes, "There's your band." Like, so we rehearsed, and our first two gigs were supporting all the Images at the Bungalow Bar, and we were called the Oxfam Warriors, right? Jerry gave us that name. And then Alan said, Kate Macias, and he said, "I quite like the songs, Hodgie, but your band are all Neds." He said, "I don't know, having Neds on my label," right? So foolishly, or maybe correctly, I sacked all the guys in the band, and I asked Ken and David, who were in a band called Raw Deal that I'd written about in the fanzine, to play in the band, and they said yes. And then we played, and Alan said, "I'll have you. We're going to be on Postcard," which is a really big label at the time, Orange Juice and Ashtek Camera. And I remember him saying to me, "You know, Hodgie, you got bigger Neds than the ones you had before." You meant Ken and David. I was going, "But they live in Bodwell and they've got a stable." You know, they've got horses. They're not Neds, you know. But so anyway, we ended up in Postcard for a while, and then people like it. We did really well. We got on the whistle test, you know, without being signed up, and we got front cover. We got really lucky. You know, people liked us right away. We got a lot of press because Glasgow was kind of hot at the time. And then we supported Elvis Costello and he had a couple of hundred on tour, and Elvis wanted to produce us, so he produced us. And that really started a big race to sign up the band, you know, on the major, and we signed to London Records. And then at that time, record labels, A, gave you a lot of money and gave you a lot of time to hone your art. It's like an apprenticeship, you know. So they stuck with us and we had hits and we did really well. So that was basically the story of the Bluebells.
You could have been a tabloid journalist if you hadn't made it, making up bands' names. And
that's a history. It's a very short book.
But obviously when you start a band...
Obviously
when you start a band, Bobby, it has to be influenced by somebody. So, like, some people are influenced by, you know, experiencing growing up, be it football or whatever. And of course, then music influences people as well. So what was the influences, you know?
Well, the biggest one was Orange Juice. I mean, I was a massive Orange Juice fan and a big Old Images fan. And Ken and David, their band was called Raw Deal. And we were all influenced by punk. But the difference between me and Ken and David was I was a bit older, so I liked to play bands like the Velvet Underground and the Birds and Big Star as well. So they hadn't really heard of those bands. I hope I'm correct saying that. But so I brought that influence in, and Ken and David brought in, you know, obviously the folk music, because their father was big friends with Dominic Bean, and they brought in, you know, that kind of harder edge. Ken's, and also Ken's a great singer, so, you know, and David was a fantastic drummer, so it really, they brought in vital components, you know, and together we managed to make, I think, to create our own kind of sound eventually. At the start, we were very, very basic. Like I said, very like Orange Juice, very like, you know, Old Images, very, you know, just beginning to learn how to do it. Well, me especially, and the guitar player Russell, and Lawrence, the bass player, we hadn't been in bands before, so we were just really, really getting working out how it works, you know. But we did it very quickly.
Yeah, because I suppose, like, you know, as I said earlier on, you know, everyone was labels, you know, ska, punk, new wave, heavy metal, but in that period, like Dexy's kind of, you know, mixed soul with kind of folk and you know, the fiddle and stuff like that. Yous mixed, you know, that kind of punk attitude with folk, you know, and we said where the influence came from, and the Pogues had mixed Cayley music with punk. Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, this was, you know, opening up.
It's a very good way of putting it. It's absolutely correct as well.
And fascinating, right? And when I heard The Wakes in Glasgow, the band The Wakes, I thought, wow, this is great. Because at the time, all the bands in Glasgow, with maybe the exception of Shebeen, who although they were doing rebel music, they had that kind of, they had that punk attitude, whereas, you know, the drum and the bass was coming into the music in Glasgow, the Blarney Pilgrims stuff. But The Wakes then took it. I thought they took it in another direction. Then they introduced that kind of that punk anti-fascist attitude with this folk and songwriting. And they made a decision, you know, that they weren't going to play pubs. They were going to start playing venues and become a rock and roll band. And
good for them. Yeah.
And for me, that like for me, obviously the Pogues were a bigger band than the Wakes, but the Pogues were the London Irish, and no one ever really called a Glasgow Irish sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the Wakes are, but it definitely. And maybe unknown to themselves, they've definitely been influenced by Dexys, the Bluebells.
I recognise that feel at the top, but they've just, what's happened, a lot of bands, because I've been around bands for a long time, there's a certain moment where you get the kernel of the realisation that we're quite good. And then the confidence kind of surges through you, right? And that takes you, that gives you the boldness to try pushing a direction that's your own, whereas you don't feel safe. You don't no longer have to play a cover song. You can move into your own song because you think, this is a good song. This is as good as a song that as we're covering, Yeah. So that takes, they've probably got to that point. I've seen a lot of bands do it, all of a sudden they have the courage. Simple Minds is a great example, where they're not playing the Mars Bar anymore. They're thinking worldwide, they're thinking, they're hearing music all the world and they're bringing in electronics, and because they were quite a conventional band at the start, and then all of a sudden they were right on the cutting edge of dance music, electronic music, and they were bold enough and confident enough in themselves to take that big jump, They weren't worried about losing any audience they had. They would get a bigger one. And the same with U2. I mean, I remember reading that U2 book where they talk about Simple Minds and Bono saying, they gave us the confidence to not to be U2 anymore, to think about not being big in Ireland, to be, to take the stage show somewhere else, I mean, I remember going to see U2 were playing at Strathclyde and all the images were supporting them, and I remember Bono saying, Claire's too young to be in a band. She was probably about 17, 16 at the time. And I was thinking, my God, you're not much older,
Yeah.
So, I thought it was a strange thing to say. I met them a lot of times with Dave. They're great guys, you two.
They've done
great
all right for themselves, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? They're totally undervalued at the moment. People have got a big thing about slagging off Bono for being, meeting George Bush and put his hat on a plane to visit the Pope, But they forget how good they were. I mean, it's not worth knocking them, man. They've made some fantastic records. And history will prove that,
Back then, especially, when albums were tabla pops and you had to sell records to be, But now it's more live, isn't it, because of, streaming. But, people voted with their money for U2. And I've seen U2 a couple of times myself. I'm not a massive fan now, but I have seen them a number of times from the 80s right up to recently. But you mentioned Simple Minds there. And in Ireland, there's loads of bands never made it outside Ireland. And we had a venue in our hometown, Drogheda, called the Boxing Club. And they all played there on the way up, they became big in Ireland and some made it in America. Like the Cranberries were massive in America. But they all played this venue. Yeah. So we were so lucky to see every Saturday night we seen a band. And 9 out of 10 of them were done. And you didn't care who you were going to see because it was the only venue in the town that had a live rock and roll venue. And it was a shithole. They sold large bottles of Guinness, Smittix and Harp, or you could get a Penrhyn Black. The toilets were tiny and they were flooded generally. There's a tiny little hilarious stage, but everybody played there, on the way up. And then a lot of bands played on the way down as well, a lot of the punk bands. So there was that as well.
There's no downers at up, but remember.
Yeah, Tom Robinson, Hazel O'Connor, bands, you see, but then there'd be bands coming up and there was a mod band in Ireland called The Blades and they were meant to be, the jam of Ireland.
Yeah.
And they used to do a double header in the Bag of Hin, a midweek gig with U2. And it was touch and go who was going to be the biggest band. And it turned out to be U2. But The Blades do, they get back together once a year. And it's normally a cashing in for Christmas gig.
There's a few of them going around the moment.
But it's happening in a couple of weeks. So it's going to be good to see them again. They're playing the Academy.
But it's still Christmas, but.
Yeah, but Christmas gigs were cancelled for 2 years.
So they
have to make it back. But the Glasgow music scene and the Scottish music scene, when I think back to, I was a teenager, you had the Bluebells, your Big Country, Simple Minds.
Orange Juice, Isaac Camera, Hipsley. I mean, you had so many bands.
Like there was like you can understand now, like, you know, that why so many of them got signed, because there's so many good bands, like, in...
Do you know what helped it a lot? There's a lot of competition, but it was friendly, you know, like, if you heard a good song by another band or went to a good gig, it inspired you, you know, it did make you wanted to get up your game, you know, right? So all the bands kind of like, we're all friends, we all hang out together, we all shared their equipment, we all shared, you know, anything we could share, we shared, but it drove you on, you know. In my band now, we've got a Camo from Ashtech Camera, we've got Douglas from Article 58, right, you know, we've got, Kate and Dave, obviously, you know, but so we've got all the guys in our band, we've played with James Kirkmore, all the guys in our band, we've been friends the whole period of time, you know, Mick Slaven, of course, from Bougie Bougie, and so it's great now to be all in the same band together, and like I said, there's not a lot of angst, you know. I mean, maybe in the mid-80s when we were all on the charts, it was a bit more bitchy, maybe, you know, for the right sense of word, because the press magnified. I can make a joke to you and say, like, you know, Skin's a terrible singer, right? Because he's not a terrible singer. But if you put that in print, then people might think, there's no context of how he said it, you know. You might, obviously you're joking. By the way, I never said he was a terrible singer, but he's a great singer. But you get the point of making. You can speak a joke about your friends, and you know it's a joke, but in cold black and white print, it looks quite offensive, you know what I mean? So that's the thing that you have to be careful about, you know. And like I said, people slagging off you too. I mean, it's a crazy thing to do, really, isn't it? You know, a band that sold that many records and that song One alone is just one of the best songs ever, you know. So
yeah, and like the likes of you two with the success, there would have been a roll-on effect that a lot of young bands in Dublin and in Ireland would have started off, because they kind of would have looked, oh, if they
absolutely
can do it, we can do it.
And absolutely.
Probably the same in Scotland as well, because like, failed to mention Deacon Blue and... Yeah. Like, there's so many.
And don't forget, you two were probably doing the same thing that Orange just did to us here, and all they just did for us, encouraging up and coming bands, giving them venues, giving them support, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they were. So, I mean, people should never forget that alone. And like you said, that, you know, it's like Tottenham Court Road, right? There's a reason why there are 150 hi-fi shops there, because people want to compare everything, you know, they want to go down each shop and see what's there. So, the same with bands. The more bands are around the city, the better for the whole city, you know. You don't want just one, you know, only that band's going to make it. You want as many great bands, as many great football teams, as many great football players as you can get, the better, you know.
And there's not so many great venues as well in Glasgow, like you've King Tut's,
and that time of some amazing ones,
you know, yeah, and different venues. Size venues, like,
yeah, it was fantastic. Glasgow's a great place, but I would say that era, it's probably as close as you're going to get to Liverpool in the 60s as what Glasgow was like in the 80s, because it was so compact. I'm sure London has the same feeling at the punk time, but like I said, Glasgow, I mean, I can think of being in the Rock Garden in probably say 1982, and I was saying nearly every person in that bar got a record deal. You know, every person who was just in that bar drinking started a band who got a record deal, and that's probably, what, 150 people. You know, at that scene who are forever involved in the music scene. We've been involved in the music scene 40 years later, and none of us thought we'd last 4 weeks. And I'm talking about all the bands. I mean, I remember each year thinking, oh, we're still going. You know what I mean? You know, oh, we're in the charts. Oh, we're going to America. Oh, we're going to Japan. You know, like, it was, each day was a push. You knew it was going to end. You mean, but nowadays, even if it ends, it isn't the end, because your turn comes back around again, so.
Yeah, and even now, like, I think the Glasgow music fans are very loyal. I find sometimes, like, especially with the U2 thing in Dublin, and I've probably slagged them off myself over the years, yeah. You know. I think, you know, maybe it's kind of, we have a kind of a case of, you know, oh, he got a new car. You know, yeah, where did he get the money? Like, you know, instead of saying, "Oh, it's a red car, it's lovely."
Yeah, yeah.
I think we can be a bit like that with music. But I find in Glasgow that, I went to see Paolo Nutini in an open air gig in Ireland, and it was brilliant. And it was kind of an older-ish group. It wasn't wild, and everyone was, you know, quite conservative, sitting down enjoying the gig, and it was a brilliant lineup. And then I went to see him in Belhouston Park, because my wife's a massive fan, and it was bonkers. And it was everyone from 16-year-olds to 60-year-olds, And you know, it was like, you know, he's one of our own.
And can I tell you something, right? See, when the Pope came, it was exactly the same. It was just gangs of kids on Buckfast having a party, man, right? You know, it's a massive crowd, man. And like, there's probably more trouble at the Pope gig than there was at the TV gig. I'm serious. There was drunken priests there, you know. There was priests there out of the trolley, man, you know.
It was a big gig for them, you know.
The support band was great, but...
But even like, we talked about, you know, record sales and Top of the Pops. You look at Jerry Cinnamon. You know, Jerry Cinnamon, fantastic. He's done it on his own, like, without a record label. Like,
he's got a band now as well. He's got a really great band as well.
Like, he's crossed music genres. Because like my son goes to these festivals and I say, who did you see? And he might mention one band and he's been in a dance tent for 3 days.
Yeah.
Then he comes home and sleeps for a week.
Yeah.
But he said, oh, I went to see Jerry Cinnamon. He said he was brilliant, like, you know. So there is that kind of, no, he's kind of really crossing over.
You got those GBX mixes of Jerry Cinnamon. That really helped, you know, George Bowie. That really helped Jerry Cinnamon because, I mean, we played them as well, man. And just Jerry Cinnamon over a big, huge techno track, man, you know, right, you know. But those kids love it, man, you know, Bits and Pieces, all those songs. I play them sometimes when I was, you know, going through that period originally, you know. And they're great records, man. I mean, if you really, I mean, like I said, people could be there sorry about dance music, but they don't get it. It's not made to be played in your house. It's made to be played in a big venue with thousands of people. It's made to make you go bonkers. It's not designed to be tasteful, you know.
And that SW3 gig, I've seen the videos and the light show, even, you know.
Yeah.
The light show was amazing. Like, and it was great. I forget who we played the next day, but anyway, it was Dundee United. But we were in the hotel like that evening after the game, and they were just constantly talking about the gig, you know, the gig, the show. So it's kind of like, and then again, it's back to Glasgow, like, embrace the dance scene. It seems to embrace all music scenes.
It does, and the same people, it's funny, we've got a great club in Glasgow called Optimo, right? And Optimo is like a musical education for a DJ and for a guy in a band. So my favourite bit of Optimo in the sub club was to go in right at the very start, because my girlfriend worked here, but the music they played at the start was phenomenal, you know, and they'd work up to the mad dance, you know, like the sub bass would kick in and you'd feel sick, right? But the music, the tracks that I've found, well, discovered my in October, they discovered them and I heard them. I treasure those tracks to this day, man, you know, like, and they became a big influence on the songs that I wrote, you know. So that's going to clubs, and same in Texas and Johnny. I mean, I know it's the same thing for him, same for Skin and Hipsway, because we go out, you know, and we absorb. I mean, even though we're older now, we still go to those places. You know, we're the oldest person in the club, you know. So, but you're still learning about music, you know. And maybe that's the sort of thing that that people should, you know. Bobby Gillespie, another great example, you know. You don't stop because you've had success, you know. We love music, you know. We love our own music. We love music, you know, and we want to hear it. You know, we want to hear whatever the new thing is or the old thing is or what I've missed before. So have you played me a track that I've never heard before? I'd be over the moon. You know what I mean? Like you're talking about reggae there, right? I'm one of those guys who think I know every single reggae tune in the world, right? It's impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, always new to discover, you know. And that's like Andy Weatherall's another fantastic example of that. You know, Andy Weatherall put on the first Bluebells gig in London, you know, and years later, you know, he's probably 17, 18 at the time, you know, right? But you stay friends, and then to watch him progress, obviously, sadly, he's gone now, but he never stopped listening to records for 1 minute. And he would play anything if he liked it. He didn't care what, if it was U2 or Gilbert O'Sullivan. He didn't even, probably didn't even look at the label. He just heard the content, you know, and that's the most important thing, I think, you know.
Yeah, I bought a lad contacted me and said that someone was selling it was a CD collection of ska and reggae stuff, and so I went and I just bought it, you know, and it was in a box in the attic for ages, and I started going through it recently, and the reason I went through it was because another lad said to me, I'm giving away my CD collection, I'm moving house. So he said, no, there's some crap in it and there's some good stuff, you can keep what you want. So I said, look, I'll take the whole lot. So I now have two big boxes I'm going through. I was going through them last night for a couple of hours, and I'm going. And I have my phone, and I'm checking the band out on my phone, you know, and I'm playing a song and I go, right, that's crap. But I'm finding some reggae stuff and I've gone, never mind that I haven't heard of the song. Yeah. I've never even heard of the act, you know. And
well, we'll see when you come next time. I've got hard drives of it. I'll put it on a stick for you.
Brilliant.
Stuff you will never believe, man. Honest to God, man. You know, magic. I mean, really incredible. I mean, Byron Lee, Legionnaires and stuff. I mean, right back to the start of it. And this, I mean, Jackie Mitu and all that. You've actually done a
Jackie Mitu, brilliant.
You show how fantastic you are, man, you know.
I'm looking forward to that now. Baz will be getting excited when he's listening.
I have to find a big enough hard drive to put it on for you.
You mentioned you started the fanzine to get into gigs. I started the fanzine in 1989. There was an underground ska scene in the late 80s, around the same time as Acid House. And there was a crossover as well. And there was a local band, and Leslie died during the COVID, the singer Trenchtown. And they were kind of like a punk ska band. And I always said if they had been American, they would have been, they were kind of pre-Rancid. But, you know, Rancid sounded like them rather than them sounding like Rancid. They took their influence from like Stiff Little Fingers, The Roots, the two-tone movement, and kind of mixed it in with, you know,
Sizzle, No Doubt. Remember No Doubt? They were a ska band at the start.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. And actually, there was three of their CDs in the box.
Oh, right, there you go. She's a great singer as well, man. She's really good.
But so they used to play in the boxing club as a support band for us, and then because they had a big local following, and I just wanted to be involved, and I couldn't play an instrument, and I couldn't sing. So, well, I could sing, but I was more suited for a punk band.
Yeah.
And that's why I started the fanzine. And I always remember... I went down to the local resource centre and I said, look, I couldn't even type. I got people to type bits and I'd cut pictures out of magazines.
We drew pictures on ours.
And Laura Lincoln on the front. It was print stitched on the front. And in marker, I had wrote Rare and Rude, issue 1, 50p.
And I printed
50 copies. And I says, right, well, if I go to 10 pubs and I sell 5 in each pub before the gig, well, that's me money. I get enough money to go to a gig then and get a few bills. And it just goes to show, you know, with the internet now and the way people, you know, get their news now. I walked into the first pub, which was a rock bar called The Cellars. The first person I sold a copy to was Sandra, who's now my wife. And
wow, good news.
By the time I moved up and down, it was if you can think of the Cavern only for smaller, it's an underground kind of cave bar. And as I walked up and as I walked back, people were asking me for copies and I'd none left. I'd sold all the fanzines, and it was heavy metal people were buying them. Punk rockers were buying them. They weren't into ska music, but it was a novelty to see, someone produce a fanzine. And I'd done that for a couple of years. And I tell you one thing, I didn't get into many gigs free, but I got plenty of free records.
Bring me some over. I bring you the hard drive. You bring me some fanzines, right?
I don't have one copy of the fanzine now, but of that Rare and Rude. But I think my wife has still a couple. I think she's still a few.
Even copy them again. Photocopy the one she's got.
Just
start selling them again.
No, like, it definitely wouldn't win the Booker Prize Award.
You would know, fanzine actually.
But yeah, look we spoke about the Glasgow scene, your formative years, the Bluebells, the talent that's coming through now. And it's great to hear you talking about the dance scene as well, because that might bring a few of the younger listeners in.
My daughter goes out clubbing all the time now. She's 21, and like, it's funny. I remember my daughter was about, she's probably about 11, and she's playing this song with the Doors, right? And I come in and goes, oh, that's the Doors. And she goes, how do you know about them? I goes, well, there's a famous band. And I goes to the singer's dead. He died in 1968. And she goes, what do you mean he's dead? She had no concept. Oh, and I think that's the great thing about today, right? None of these kids have any idea of the timeline. They don't care. You know, they don't have any slaves. They don't care. They press their button. They go on YouTube or Spotify or TikTok, and they just hear a song. And whereas we were obsessed with the details, when that guy was born, when was his first record, you know what I mean? You know, when was his... The whole... We studied and studied and studied music. Nowadays, it's just, I like that song, and that, I think that's kind of great as well in its own way, you know. They don't care about who's in the band.
Yeah, and as a visitor to Glasgow on a regular basis, you know, from my start going to Glasgow, it's a massive football town. Massive football is everything to most people in Glasgow. It's a massive music town because there's great venues.
Yeah.
And you know, and even like, you know, you can see some of the pub singers in the pubs and that, and like, you go to a gig, you know, you'll enjoy it. But you go to some of the pubs and the music and entertainment may not be, you know, top of the pops, but some of the characters you'll meet in there.
Fantastic.
It is a city full of, you know,
it's just Dublin. I mean, Dublin is an adventure town too. You know? I mean, I know it changed a bit, but I was there, last time I was there, I thought it was very different, you know. But again, we were going there in the 80s, that changed a lot then. As I DJed in a few places, that guy had that big Ron McCullough built a club in Dublin. The guy's father was the president, I think, at the time of Ireland. What's his name again? I can't remember the guy's name, but it was a really, really brilliant state-of-the-art nightclub, you know.
Was it the Tripod?
I think it was a big glass, broken glass wall. At the end, it was all broken glass, the design, you know. Very plush place. I mean, we used to go to that place, Lily's Bordello, a lot as well, you know.
That was quite famous.
Yeah, the girl was in there all the time, the girl from that band. She was in there all the time, man, you know. It was a great, great place, man, you know. It's a really great place.
Yeah, we kind of take the Dublin for granted because we live in a kind of a town 30, 40 miles away.
Yeah.
We have our own little scene, but we do, you know, generally you have to go to Dublin to see the bigger bands or, you know. Drogheda's really, I always say, Drogheda's a weekend town.
It's called The Point, wasn't it? The Point, was that the big venue?
The Point is the big venue, yeah. I think it's called the O2 now or the Tree Arena.
And we went to see Leonard Cohen playing in the park. That was a brilliant gig as well.
That's
man.
Right, he played in Kilmainham. Didn't he? Besides Kilmainham Jail, actually, that's another place full of history in Dublin. But that's what I see Glasgow as, you know. I see it as a place of football, music, full of characters, right?
But yeah.
You're from there. What is Glasgow to you?
Well, I've lived in Glasgow my whole life. I had about 3 or 4 years in London. It's basically the only time I've ever lived here. I mean, I've been lucky to be all over the world. It's funny because, I think everyone who comes to Glasgow is shocked at how good it is. I mean, we've got a Batgirl filming here at the moment, you know, so you've got all your actors here, right? I think they'll be shocked at how Glasgow's got a really bad reputation. I don't know why, you know, it's been violent or dirty or, you know, all these things that's thrown at Scotland, we're always the worst, you know, never the best. But I mean, Glasgow's a fantastic place to live. I mean, as you mentioned, all those bands you mentioned, the football teams, you know, the stuff that's come out of Scotland and Ireland, it's phenomenal, you know, and England, of course, as well, right? But you know, Glasgow never seems to get the what would you say, the kudos. Edinburgh's more pretty, you know, London's bigger and more wealthy, you know, Ireland's got a better crack, you know. But you know yourself when you come over here, right? Have you ever seen any trouble, you know, once in a blue moon, you know? But it's no, the vibe and the energy. Eh? No comment, Ireland. But despite the danger, it's a really fantastic place to live, you know, right? And I think what we've all got from Glasgow, I know there's rich people and poor people in Glasgow, but I think there's not really a class structure in Glasgow where people, you know, people mingle everywhere. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's definitely a socialist thing. And I think Glasgow, despite what you might hear in the press, is a very socialist country. You know, I know people keep saying, "Oh, Glasgow's really conservative," or "Scotland is really conservative," and we should stay in the union and blah blah blah. I mean, need this and that, and it's all grouse hunters and guys in tweed suits. It's not. It's just Glasgow's Scotland. I would say around the world is known as being socialist. James Connolly, you know the whole, you know, Keir Hardie thing that began here. You know, right? You know, we have people in the Politburo in the Soviet, you know, government from Glasgow. Right, you know, I mean, Scottish people went to Ireland, as you well know, English people too, Roger Casement, you know, and the American Revolution full of Scottish people. So we don't accept things. We try. I think we're very creative and progressive thinking country, you know, right? And I'm always upset when I see that rubbish in the press, say, or TV by people who are also Scottish, you know, but it seems like they feel obliged to run it down. I mean, independence or non-independence, fair enough. Personally, I'm pro-independence, right? You know, I'm pro-United Ireland. I'm not afraid to say it, you know, but I'm definitely 100% pro-socialist, you know, right? I mean, I think Britain could be the country I hoped it could be, and then there wouldn't be a case for independence, you know. There wouldn't have been an Irish Home Rule movement, you know. That people aren't stupid, you know. They don't want these things because they want a flag or a national anthem, or, you know, or they want these things because they want their life to get better, you know. And 68 countries in the world have independence days from Britain, you know, right? It's not like Britain's doing something right, you know. Britain should be doing something right. That's the problem. That's the thing you want, that we all want to happen. Oh, I've got political.
That's no problem. With football and with music, you know, one thing that unites us all, it's either the team we follow or the band we go to see or the DJ we go to see. And both football and gigs, there's no class structure there. You know, you can go to a game of football and everybody's the same, whether they're on the dole or they're a millionaire.
Yeah.
But they share the same passion for the team.
Yeah.
They kick every ball and they go to a gig, you know. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you can still dance.
Yeah. Aren't you dead proud of Celtic, how they began? You know, like what they began. I mean, just think about it. How old are we now as a club? You know, over a century old, right? When we began to feed starving children, and here we are in 2022, and we're struggling to feed starving children. So you tell me what's changed, you know, in that time, right? Nothing's changed. The most food banks in the world, in the modern world, are in Britain, you know, right? I mean, people have to, we rely on charity for lifeboats, rely on charity for cancer. Other governments take our tax money and spend it on that, you know, right? They don't have charity. They have well-run countries that take care of people who aren't. We strive in this country to reward the entrepreneur, right? You know, on the richer you are, the more rewards you get, right? And the harder you struggle and the harder your life is, or the tougher your body, you know, your body's broken down, or if you've got some sort of like disability or mental disability, the more you're abandoned, you know, right? And any government will, any government that I aspire to have would think, let's help those people, you know, that's the ones we should be helping, not, you know, people living in squalor, right? In the 21st century in Britain, one of the richest countries in the world, you know, we had oil, we had everything going for us, and yet we've got, now after 70 years, we've got the highest taxation, we've got the lowest standard of living in 30 years, and no one thinks that's a problem. They'll think, and in COVID, apparently COVID's defeated, but our Queen's got COVID. You know, right? Are people blind? Are people not noticing, you know, the fact that everything that guy, they're telling you, is structurally a lie, you know, that, you know, there isn't, they take all the money from the Russian government, the Tory party, and now they're talking about us, you know, or you might have no gas because we're going to put sanctions on Russia. What happened to our gas? You know, what happened to all the things that we had of our own, you know? So these are things that, I mean, you talk about bands in football, people would join bands because they were poor, or they had no prospect of getting a job at the start, and became boxers and became football players. Right, this is all working class history. That's the myth, right? You know, right? But basically, that's not true, is it? You know, right? People have to make a living, right? No one. I remember that. You know, no one really wants to work if they can avoid it. What they really want is a job they work at that they really enjoy, right? My dad didn't want to work in government shipyards in a boiler in the middle of the night, you know, night shift from 16 till he died, right? He didn't want to do that, did he? But that's how he paid the bills. So that's, and then when I go to my dad goes, well, what you know, when you were growing up, he said, I didn't care what you did as long as you didn't work like the same job that I did. That's what I want. I mean, the thing is, now I want myself to be a rock star. Do you understand? That's how much the paradigm shifted, you know, right? Where the working class, you know, was seen as being noble, you know. Well, what they wasn't noble. They were just fodder, you know. They were given the lowest wages possible. Unions, where's the unions gone? Unions used to be a really British thing, you know. Where unions could change things. We could have a government that we helped contribute to instead of Russians contributing to it, you know. But the unions are gone. You can't strike. There's hardly any sick pay. The pensions are really, really low. So it shows you that the whole twist has gone from, you know, in, the working class community, which is now basically the unemployed community, you know. And there's a guy the other day on the television saying that Scotland, if we were independent, would just be a country of people who take welfare. What an insult that is, you know, to say that everyone in this country is just choosing to be on the dole and claim benefit. Who does that? It's so hard to be on the dole anyway. It's almost like a sort of like university course to fill in the forms. you know, you have to wait 6 weeks to get a payment. You have to take a loan out.
It's the same in Ireland.
Yeah, there you go. So why aren't these governments taking care of the people who need help? We don't need missiles. We've got missiles in the Holy Lot. That's not stopping Putin, is it? You know, the only way we can stop Putin is to fire those weapons at them, you know, and then they fire back at us, and then there's no point. Then we're all dead, aren't we? So I don't understand really what the thing is. We're allowed to go and bomb Iraq at will, you know, but we're good guys, you know, even though it's been proved that there was no weapons of mass destruction and the government didn't care anyway, they still got to go to bomb them anyway. Every side's as bad as the other. So just give us a good government, you know. Just give us politicians who care about the people who vote for them, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of politicians do become politicians to change stuff, but I think then they just become part of the status quo.
They do, absolutely right. It's the same with the SNP going to Westminster. They're now part of the Westminster process, you know, where they're getting their 24-hour bars and they're getting, you know, their free lunches and they're getting their expenses. It's a hard thing to give up. It's like me, as I say, joking about going to Parkhead, right? You know, like, I go there and I'm someone's guest and I'm treated like really, you know, really specially. I'm still happy to go pay in and go to the ground, like I said, the old-fashioned way. It's horses for courses, you know. But the thing is, here it seems to be all they want now is a lordship, you know. All they want is a state pension, you know. I mean, a bung from the government, you know. Right, you know, they want to get a contract. You know, it's all about privilege. And I thought, the one thing I thought growing up in the 60s and 70s and 80s was privilege was the thing that was going away. You know, it would become, you know, it would be how good you were at something would get the job. Now it's not, is it? It's back to the same thing as before. I'm someone's son, I'm someone's daughter, or I paid £1,000,000 into the Tory party, so I'm going to be a lord. You know, the rise. I mean, Marcus Rashford, he's been given a reward for saying the government shit. Basically, right. I mean, he's feeding children, and the government are going, thank you for feeding the children that we're not feeding.
Yeah,
do you understand what I'm saying? It's almost like, you know, a surreal satire, you know, right? You know, let's reward these people who are doing the food banks because we can't be, because it saves us doing them, you know, just feed them. I know
we're smiling here, but like, it's so true. And Bobby, just before we finish, do you think that, the music and the lyrics, you know, that you grew up with, because I certainly do, they're so relevant now as they were back in
the 80s. Absolutely spot on. I mean, and the thing is, that's the classic greatness of music and poetry and plays and films, right? Someone every week is capturing the moment exactly right, nailing it, writing it down, filming it, like I said, right? And every time you hear it, you realise that's exactly the situation that I'm in. You know, I remember when I was growing up, right, there was a great song by Gilbert Sullivan called We Will, right, you know, and the lyric was, in the morning they'll all go downstairs and get eat our cornflakes, right? You know, he's an Irish guy, by the way, Gilbert Sullivan. Have you ever got a chance to listen to that song? Every lyric in it is everyone's life. If I ever think of my childhood, that song always takes me there, right? You know, we don't do it anymore, do we? You don't wake up in the morning, sit down, have breakfast together, your dad goes to work. What families does that happen in? I would say very few, right? You know, you don't sit around and watch, you know, a film together anymore. If kids are on their phones or iPads or you're on your headphones or you're on Netflix, you know. But that, the beauty of that song and the family life it describes is, it's like, say, I don't know, like a Van Gogh painting, you know. It's a moment in time that will always resonate for me, you know. And like you said, there's probably a million songs. That's why I love music. That just, I mean, it's like a Velvet Underground song that I can't stop singing at the moment, right? And the line is, I've come to hate my body, right? You know, right? And as you get older, that's the one thing. Every time, it's your body. Your brain stays sharp your body's giving up on you, man, right? You know, and it's, it can be the smallest thing, you know, and you, and I always, every time I think of that, that song's in my head, you know, I come to hate my body and all that it requires of me, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, was he going through that at the same pace? And then you realise, no, it's about a woman who's, about a guy who's changing into a woman, you know, physically getting the operations, you know, and I'm thinking, well, beautiful, you know, what a lyricist, you know.
But it's, when you talk about lyrics, and when I said, do you think the songs are, you know, still relevant now, we both agreed that, yeah. Yeah. When you were speaking about Marcus Rashford, the House Martin second album, The People That Grin Themselves to Death, does the lyrics in that song? I had Paul on the podcast, absolutely brilliant. I think we spoke for 2 or 3 hours. He was just amazing.
The perfect socialist pop star songwriter. I hate Paul Weller's another one. Obviously, Shane McGowan's another one. Edwin Collins is another one who just capture exactly what it is like to be alive in Britain at that moment in time, man, you know.
And it's funny, he's living there, when you mentioned Marcus Rashford, Paul's living in Manchester. He now lives in Manchester. And when he wrote that album, you know, and that song, it says, even when the kids were starving, they all thought the Queen was charming. You know, and it's just the Marcus Rashford. It's like someone says, oh, it's like a comedy sketch. Marcus Rashford's out feeding the kids, and then the Queen says, someone says to the Queen, you need to give him an award because he's doing the government's job, you know. It's just, you know.
Invite him to a garden party to thank him, you know, and give him cakes and scones, you know, right? And it is crazy. The garden party costs more than it would cost to feed the kids. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's that mentalness that Britain's, I mean, other countries have got it too, don't get me wrong, right, mate? But Britain seems to have no plan in place. I would say for the next 100 years, there's no plan in place. Keir Starmer is almost exactly the same as Boris Johnson, you come right down. You know, there's no plan in place where they think the system is wrong, right? And the system is obviously wrong, right? I mean, if you're talking about Celtic, right? Celtic form in Glasgow to feed children who are starving, that's a football club. Starting, you know, to raise money, right? And here we are in 2022, a football player is raising money to feed starving children. Where's the progression?
No,
there's no progression. It's just the same old, you know. And then we the people like football players and people in bars like us, we're the ones that create a diversion that make people take their minds off,
you know, shit life.
Yeah, so maybe we're complicit in it all as well, you know, because there is no. I mean, I'm using the words. Look behind you. You got that Tom Robinson symbol behind you. From up against the wall, right? You know, and the whole Tom Robinson ethos. Another great writer, another great socialist. You know, where people in the 70s, 60s, 80s, I would say 90s, realised that something was going badly wrong. Now there's a kind of like, you know, acceptance of it. Things are going wrong, but there's nothing we can do about it. That seems to be the general malaise, doesn't it? Everyone knows that guy's a bad one, you know, right? But we can't do anything about it. You know, that's just gone. And then, like, as you were saying, maybe Ireland's exactly the same thing, you know?
Yeah, like, I'm not even going to go into a debate on Irish politics there, because that's the whole other episode, Bobby. We've covered some amount of ground, and it's funny. I love having people who've lived the life in bands on, because
get Bobby on. Bobby'd be great on this.
Yeah, I'd love to have him on. We did reach out to him, but he didn't come back to us. Like when Paul Heaton was on, Paul was probably the first non-Celtic fan we had on. If I think so, through the podcast, it's given a platform. People thought, you know, oh, this is going to be a bit sad, but it's actually not. It's people who share our values, because we've had the Devon and Walkers on when they were on strike. You know, we've done a Maradona tribute from someone who grew up in Napoli, but now lives in Glasgow, which was great because it was easy to get. And we've had, you know, politicians, pop stars, but the Paul Heaton one is probably our most listened to. And one of the other ones that was we got a huge listenership was Peter Hooton from The Farm, who was in Hillsborough. And,
what a great guy's there, man. Oh, fantastic guy.
And it's always great to hear people's stories, because I always find that people who who sit down and write lyrics and, you know, play in bands. They, you know, to write decent lyrics, you have to be aware of what's going on around you. And sometimes, sometimes I interview footballers, and football is their life. You know, they were working class, they became footballers, and they made money. And then,
Absolutely. So
they didn't really. They, whereas I find with some of the bands, people that were in bands, or you know, even like the likes when we had Paddy McMenamin, man, we got a great listenership for that because Paddy was a prisoner in cages, and he had something to tell, you know, and how he progressed himself in education at 50.
Ah, well, that went up. I liked it. Yeah, and his book too. You mentioned
his book is brilliant, Bobby. I started, and it's one of them ones. And Alan Thompson's just arrived in the post today. Thomas sent me one, and I'm going, you're going to have to wait, Tom, because this book is.
He was at the game the other day.
I seen that. Yeah, I seen him below. Yeah, I'm in contact with Tom.
Right, him in Glasgow a lot as well, man. He was crazy, man. He lives right in the West End as well, man. You know, good fun.
He's a good one. Not, no, he does. What was he singing? He puts his karaoke thing. I've been at karaoke with him. I forget what he sings. I think it's Blue Jeans or something. You know,
Neil Diamond. Yeah, Forever in Blue Jeans.
I think that's his party piece. But listen, Bobby, it's been brilliant talking. Thank you so much for taking time out to chat to me. As I said, listeners, if you like what Bobby's talked about, check out Peter Hooton and Paul Heaton and the likes on the podcast. Thank you so much for letting us into your Celtic soul. And we'll catch up soon in Glasgow. And I look forward to seeing the Bluebells for the first time live on stage.
I let me know when you're coming. I'll give you that hard drive of the reggae stuff. Okay.
I look forward to that. If you see Johnny, give it to him. He'll give it to Mikey because I meet Mikey at most games.
I will do, but I won't see Johnny's in tour for a long time. So I'll be hard to see him. You know now. You know, I think he's back in March. But if I see him before, I'll give it to him for you. For sure. Okay.
No problem. Well, hook up anime, Bobby. As I said, thank you so much for letting us into your Celtic soul. Folks, thanks very much for listening and the continued support of the fanzine and the podcast. If you want more information on us, visit CelticFanzine.com, where you can become a member, subscribe, buy a fanzine or a t-shirt or some of our merchandise, and you can donate for the price of a pint, because we do not go behind the Patreon wall and all our content is free. So the journey continues on Sunday when we take on Hibs at Easter Road. Hopefully I'll bump into one or two of our listeners in the city on the day. So from me and Bobby, enjoy the weekend and keep the faith.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.